This is 2016, the Year in Review, from Brownfield, Ag News for America. 2016 was productive, built around an excellent harvest. In the Western Corn Belt, soybeans did better than corn for many farmers, but a lot of growers were more than pleased by both. Brownfield's Ken Anderson reviews the yields and grower attitudes of the Western Corn Belt.
Heading into this year, many farmers in the Western Corn and Soybean Belt figured it would be tough to beat the record yields they achieved in 2015. But for some, 2016 was even better.
I thought last year was probably the best year I ever had. Well, I think this year is going to top last year. Everything's been running 200 range, maybe over 200. I had a couple farms over about 220, 230, which was a definite surprise.
While some farmers were able to match or exceed 2015, corn yields overall were average to a little above average.
It looks real good, but I don't think it's as good as advertised.
A little more pollination challenges this year than what we had last year. Last year, it seemed like everything pollinated just really, really well.
We had good weather in our area, and the corn looks great from the road. When you get out in the field, it's probably a little bit disappointing.
Soybeans were a different story.
We've done some dry land that are in the 60s, and we've done some irrigated in the 70s, and we're happy with those.
Consistently high soybean yields in the upper 60s to mid-70s were fairly common, with some farmers reporting 80 bushel plus soybean yields. Phenomenal was the way one Nebraska farmer described his soybean crop. I'm Ken Anderson.
In South Dakota, it's common to talk to producers who are happy with the 2016 harvest.
It was very good. We were very blessed. We had really dry weather and had some hail again this year, but our yields were above normal. It really helps with these lower commodity prices to have those extra bushels to help pay the bills.
John Horder is from the tiny northeastern South Dakota town of Andover and says 2016 yields of both corn and soybeans exceeded his official actual production history, or APH.
Our APH in our farm is in the 150s, and we were about 20 bushel over that on corn. Our soybeans were about 5 bushel over our normal average yield, so we were very happy this year. We average about 46 on our farm across the board, so all things considered, that's very good for our area.
And just because the harvest turned out well doesn't mean a farmer can be anything but persistent. Brownfield's Mark Dorenkamp talked to a Minnesota farmer who had a good harvest, but some of his planting was done four times before it took.
Farmers across the upper Midwest experienced a myriad of challenges throughout the 2016 growing season. In general, it was wetter than normal for most of the Dakotas, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. When Brownfield spoke to Southwest Minnesota farmer Matt Widboom in early July, he looked back at a historically wet spring.
We had corn that went in the ground early April on the 11th, and that is castling to other fields that we planted, replanted again, and that's not the one you'd pick for your 4th of July picture being knee high.
Widboom replanted corn four times on certain acres as a year's worth of rain fell between April and July. Brownfield followed up with Widboom in October, and he says his crops did remarkably well.
Considering the variety of planting dates, we really were blessed with a few ticks above normal. Considering we were still planting beans the 4th of July, had planted corn in every month, April, May, June, and July, and here being early October, and we're, from a maturity standpoint where we are, we're really blessed.
Rainfall trended above normal across Minnesota this year, and yields reflected that, with statewide averages for corn and soybeans hitting unprecedented levels. Meanwhile, Southeast Wisconsin farmer Casey Kelleher told Brownfield back in mid-April that the growing season was off to a good start.
We got field cultivators going now, working some ground ahead of the planter that's going to start here tomorrow. I haven't had any of the wet spots to go around like I do in most springs, but it seems like it's a little more moisture under that layer of dry dirt on top.
In its November estimates, the USDA forecast corn production in Wisconsin to reach nearly 560 million bushels on a record yield of 180 bushels per acre. The yield estimate for soybeans was also a record at 55 bushels per acre in 2016. North and South Dakota joined Wisconsin and Minnesota as states achieving record crop yields this year. For the 2016 Year in Review, I'm Mark Dorenkamp, Brownfield.
In Illinois, Gary Cantrell had a big letdown when early in the growing season his crop endured an ill-timed cold snap that would set any crop back. But Cantrell, who farms on the western edge of Illinois, had to search for words on a recent Brownfield Google Hangout to describe his 2016 soybean harvest.
Probably had some of the best individual yields. For overall yield, I have never experienced an overall yield that I had this year. So I think we were right at 73 bushel on a little over 700 acres. So for me personally, we had a phenomenal yield. We did have a little sudden death that showed, but it never really came to fruition to the point that it impacted us on yield. It's just been a phenomenal growing year.
It was only a couple of days after his combine was cleaned up and put in the shed that Missouri Ag Director Richard Fordyce stopped by the Brownfield Studios to talk about his harvest. He hadn't added up all the scale tickets at that time, but he was pleased with the crop.
I think it's going to be a record soybean yield on our farm. I think all indications are pointing that that's going to be the case in Missouri across the board. The corn harvest was very good, probably not going to be at the level of 2014, which was a record. We had a tremendous crop in 2014, but I think the soybean yield is going to be a record.
Mid-Missouri farmer Nathan Alpers decided prior to combining that he should put up storage facilities so that marketing could be delayed until some better pricing opportunities came along.
We knew we had a big crop after when it started raining and never quit. We knew the crop was going to be a pretty big crop. So we put up two bins, a total of 82,000 bushel storage to try to help us fight the harvest lines at the elevators. And we just knew there was going to be a tremendous harvest pressure. The basis is going the other way. And we were just hoping at least if we could get 50 to 60, 70 cents back from what it would have been at harvest, that would make a good bin payment.
It was wet and cold when eastern Corn Belt farmers were trying to plant last spring. As a result, many farmers got a late start. Brownfield's Andrew Flynn has more.
Mark Seib farms in southwest Indiana and says Mother Nature caused significant delays. And in the first week of May, he had just a third of his crop planted.
The corn's out of the ground. That part looks to be in good shape. But as far as trying to get the rest of it, we've got groundwork prepared, ready to go. So when we do get to get into the field, things should go fairly fast.
Rain delays pushed further east, and western Ohio farmer Keith Kemp said it was just an average start to the growing season.
We got started there, about the middle of April. We had that 1 week of 80-degree temperatures, and we started planting. A lot of our neighbor stuff didn't plan, and you know, we had 3 or 4 days there. We got planted, and then it turned off cold and rainy, and everybody set for a good 2 weeks.
Harvest started about a month earlier than anticipated for southeast Illinois farmer Martin Barbary. Rising floodwaters didn't leave him much choice, and in August, Barbary harvested his corn at 37% moisture.
See if we could. We're not 100% sure the river's going to get it, but it's going to get really close, and we just made the decision if it was dry enough we could get it out, we'd go ahead and get some of it out on the lower parts of the field. So that's what we're trying, and we're learning how to dry really wet corn.
Warm temperature during critical times of the growing season created yield loss for some farmers. Early at harvest, central Indiana farmer George Kakasulip said yields were below average.
We're seeing some yield reduction. I was concerned we might be about 30 bushel below where we were last year on our farm, and so far that is what we're seeing. The same soil type a year ago, they're 30 bushel less this year.
Southwest Michigan farmer Jay DeRose says weather challenges from the beginning to the end of the growing season limited his yield potential.
I don't think our poor fields are as poor as we thought, but I think the top end got hurt a little bit from the heat. So I would say right now we're looking at an average crop.
Ohio farmer John Buck said green stems caused some issues for his soybean harvest.
I mean, the combines are taking a beating just chewing through the green stalks and stuff, but we're literally waiting to a frost. I haven't had one here yet, so I don't know when you would, and beans are falling out on the ground because the pods are getting dry enough that you don't want to lose it, so you're just going to munch through the green stems.
Despite challenges during the growing season, farmers, for the most part, reported both average corn yields and above-average soybean yields.
The Missouri Department of Agriculture fields a handful of complaints each year about herbicide drift damage, but this year was different. The number of complaints spiked to more than 120 by June, and the damage was specific. It was from drifting dicamba, which at the time was not labeled for on-crop use. Brownfield's Julie Harker picks up the story from there. Julie?
In the middle of summer, dicamba herbicide damage to crops came to light in southeast Missouri and quickly caught the attention of state officials. By then, dicamba drift damage to crops had been reported in almost every mid-south state, including Arkansas. But the damage in Missouri to more than 40,000 acres of crops in a four-county area of the boot heel was the worst. The University of Missouri Extension soon after held a forum on dicamba injury at the Delta Fisher Research Center in Portageville, Missouri. Kevin Bradley, weed specialist with the university, says the crux of injured soybeans and other crops in southeast Missouri was that dicamba-tolerant soybeans and cotton were released without EPA approval of a corresponding herbicide.
We don't have those formulations approved and legal to use, and so some farmers have taken it on themselves to use the older formulations, even though that's not labeled.
The use of older formulations of dicamba is illegal. A Monsanto representative at the late July meeting said its Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans were released because they're high-yielding varieties in their own right and would benefit growers. At the meeting, Brownfield reported that many of the injured soybean fields had either recovered or were recovering, depending on the concentration of the dicamba that drifted onto them. Southeast Missouri farmer Chris Porter told Brownfield that most of his soybeans were going to be fine.
I noticed the damage way early enough, and from what I learned today, you know, symptoms don't equal damage. And that's one of the biggest things I think we can take away from this today.
State Representative Don Roan of Portageville said he would introduce legislation to increase the penalty per field when sprayed illegally.
I probably will go to $20,000 a field. And the reason being is Arkansas just last week went to $20,000 a week.
Missouri Ag Director Richard Fordyce told Brownfield they were investigating more than 120 cases of reported damage, mostly in southeast Missouri.
We will, at the end of this process, we will have determined if there was in fact drift or volatilization and what was the target and what was damaged.
In November, the EPA approved registration for the new dicamba formulation, Extendamax, with vapor grip technology designed to have lower volatility to control weeds in cotton and soybean plants that have been genetically engineered to resist dicamba. In December, a southeast Missouri peach farmer sued Monsanto in Dunklin County. The lawsuit, filed by Bill Bader of Bader Farms, accused Monsanto of knowingly marketing its Extend cotton and soybean seeds to farmers without a safe herbicide to use with it. At the hearing in July, Bader told Brownfield Monsanto was partly at fault for the loss of tens of thousands of his peach trees.
You know, we need this, the technology, but why did they release a seed trait without a chemical that would work that wouldn't volatilize and walk off? And that's why I think Monsanto should be held accountable for some of this.
The lawsuit says farmers had no choice but to illegally spray dicamba to protect their crops from weeds. Monsanto issued a statement to the media saying it strongly disagrees. The company says it's the responsibility of individuals who knowingly broke the law by applying old formulations of dicamba who should bear responsibility for drift damage. I'm Julie Harker.
Transportation infrastructure continues to be a priority issue for agriculture. Brownfield's Mark Dorenkamp reports that farm commodity groups have pointed to the U.S. inland waterway system as being critical to maintaining a competitive advantage over other countries.
In September, Minnesota Farm Bureau President Kevin Papp joined others on the American Farm Bureau Trade Advisory Committee on a tour of the Mississippi River near St. Louis.
65% of our U.S. exports go down the Mississippi River.
Papp highlighted the importance of the Water Resources Development Act, which was passed in the U.S. House earlier this year and approved by the Senate this month. If signed by President Obama, the legislation would authorize 27 new water projects for construction by the Army Corps of Engineers, including funding for channels, locks, dams, and other infrastructure projects. However, appropriations committees would still need to approve funding for those projects, which Soy Transportation Coalition Executive Director Mike Steenhook says hasn't happened in the multiple years the bill has passed Congress.
You know, if we don't take care of this system, if we don't improve it, then we should only expect that we won't be the most economical choice on the international marketplace. Our transportation system, including our inland waterways, has been one of the keys to our success historically. We want that to continue, so we need to maintain this important system.
I'm Mark Dorenkamp, Brownfield.
2016 began and ended as the year of the ag company merger deals. Brownfield's Julie Harker has more about the changing landscape of seed, plant technology, and crop protection business.
Just before the new year started, Dow and DuPont agreed to terms of a merger. Syngenta was in talks with ChemChina about the Chinese government-owned company acquiring the Swiss ag chemical company and agreed to the deal in February. In September, St. Louis-based Monsanto agreed to be purchased by Bayer Crop Science of Germany. Each proposed merger brought with it concerns from farmers about less competition in the marketplace and fears of higher prices for seeds and crop protection chemicals. American Farm Bureau's chief economist Bob Young said his concerns about Bayer and Monsanto were the same as his worries about the Dow-DuPont merger, and that is decreased investment in new agriculture technologies.
And let's find the efficiency gains out of, you know, out of accounting departments or something else along those lines as opposed to what it takes to actually make ag research happen.
And yet Young is not surprised by the mergers because of the decline in farm income.
The notion that these companies have got to go off and find some efficiencies, some ways to reduce their costs, probably makes a lot of sense.
In September, Monsanto agreed to merge with Bayer. That month, Bob Young testified at a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing about what he said is a silver lining if the Dow-DuPont and Bayer-Monsanto mergers go through.
We are probably better served as an industry with at least two of these chemical genetic firms rather than would be the case if we only had one.
National Farmers Union President Roger Johnson testified that he is not convinced that there won't be competition issues.
In the past few decades, federal enforcement actions pertaining to antitrust have waned, especially where companies argue that larger combined businesses can offer lower prices. But when competition is limited, there are no long-term safeguards against future price hikes.
Soon after the ChemChina-Syngenta announcement, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack talked about his concerns.
Having dealt with the Chinese on biotechnology regulatory issues, the inconsistency, the lack of synchronization, the unwillingness to make decisions based on science raises some concerns that I have as to how this is all going to impact and affect innovation.
Vilsack, speaking to reporters, said he was keeping a watchful eye on the potential merger. On December 13th, Monsanto shareholders approved the company's proposed merger with Bayer Crop Science. By mid-December, none of the three deals had received full regulatory approval and remain pending into the new year. I'm Julie Harker.
Coming up, where the fortunes of the commodity markets are concerned, 2016 was not the friendliest for farmers' pocketbooks. It was far from the worst when it came to markets, but on the other hand, it was nowhere near the best. We'll hear about this past year's slight improvement in cattle profitability. We'll be right back on the 2016 Brownfield Year in Review.